future is now. And welcome to the SVK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name is Charles Story. I will be your host the next 15 minutes. Well, scratch that. Today, we're going to be passing over to my co-host, Jess Holgrave, who will be taking over control of today's show. Jess is a very special guest on the show. She has Galia Bernatzi. Galia is the co-founder of Bancor. Bancor developed the B Protocol Foundation, which was established back in 2017 in order to promote the development and adoption of the Bancor Protocol, a standard for the creation and intrinsical tradable tokens. These smart tokens benefit from network effects and algorithmic pricing, enabling the long tail of user-generated tokens to emerge and to be settled on their platform. Galia has done amazing things for the EOS community worldwide. She is also part of the EOS Alliance. I believe she's a board member there. But more importantly, she has an amazing story to tell. So with that in mind, let's jump into the podcast and let's find out more.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jess Holgrave. And again, I'm really excited to be guest hosting on the SVK Crypto 15 Minutes of Crypto Fame podcast. I'm here with you every Thursday. I'm a co-founder of Shios, which is an EOS block producer with a mission to bring more women and diversity into blockchain. And on Thursdays, I get to speak with super interesting women working in the blockchain space to tell you their stories and draw some attention to the amazing work being done. You can follow me on Twitter at Jessie Block, and please send me suggestions of women that you would like to hear from. This week, I'm joined by Galia Bernatzi. Galia has been working in tech startups for several years and has had successful exits from gaming startup Myopia and Particle Code. And in 2016, she became a co-founder of Bancor, which, as many of you will know, has processed billions of conversions across many, many Ethereum-based currencies to date. Galia, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. We love Shios, love the mission. You and I go back, and just a correction for the record, the company, the gaming company, was called Mytopia, not to be confused with Myopia.
My mistake.
yeah, no worries. Mytopia was the perfect place to play, my perfect place to play, and it was a multiplayer gaming network for smartphones, actually the first social gaming content for all of the different platforms that were emerging in the smartphone ecosystem, from Palm OS to Windows Mobile to BlackBerry and Symbian. These are kind of ancient technologies. At this point, it was 2005
that we started the
company, but we really kind of grew up with the smartphone market itself, if you will.
So interesting. I've been doing some work in the gaming space recently, and I'm finding it absolutely fascinating to learn about. But I want to start with really talking a bit about Bancor. I'm sure that many of our listeners will be familiar, but for people who aren't familiar with it, or maybe who don't know some of the intricacies about how Bancor compares to other ways of exchanging currency, can you give us the high level?
Yeah, definitely. So Bancor is an automated liquidity network. It really invented this category that we now call DeFi. It invented the concept of an automated market maker using smart contracts. And the idea here is to allow for currencies to be liquid to each other without needing to match buyers and sellers, which is kind of the classic exchange paradigm, both in centralized exchanges and in decentralized exchanges. The method for hundreds of years now for converting assets from one form to another has been match two people, whether they're people or bots or organizations, match a buyer and a seller who have the opposite needs and wants. One has A and wants B, the other has B and wants A, and they clear at the price that both agree on. That's where the bids and asks match in an order book, and the assets are exchanged between them. That's why we call them exchanges. Bancor invented this liquidity network methodology, the Bancor protocol, which is a standard that allows currencies to be converted from one format to another, or digital assets, more broadly speaking, from form A to form B, without ever needing a buyer or seller to be matched in order for that to happen. And the way that we do that, I'll get into the guts of the Bancor protocol, is basically by networking currencies together through the following method. Currency A holds a balance of currency B directly in its smart contract. The smart contract for currency A owns the currency B that it holds in its smart contract. And you can think of that like an inventory or like a liquidity pool. Then when a user wants to convert currency A for B, they essentially deposit A and withdraw B from that balance, or deposit B into the balance and withdraw A. So that currency A, if you will, its smart contract knows how to handle buys and sells of currency A for any user, whether they want to buy the currency or sell the currency, and it doesn't need to go find another buyer or seller to match with. It has that staked inventory, that built-in liquidity pool from which to execute that conversion. And that leads to the question of price. Well, at what price does A convert to B, or B convert to A for that matter? And that's really the Bancor formula, which is open source and transparent and immutable, of course. It's on chain, it's on the blockchain, and has been used, by the way, by many projects that many of our listeners probably know and love, such as the RAM allocation within EOS, and many other projects. And so the Bancor formula basically balances the ratios between that currency A and that held balance of currency B. So if you set the ratio between A and B when you create that currency A smart contract, if you set it at 10%, the ratio between whatever is held by A and whatever is held by B will always stay that 10%. And so as buys and sells are happening and more A is coming in and B is coming out, for example, or more B is coming in and A is coming out, the price will constantly be recalculated in order to maintain that ratio between currency A and its held balance of currency B. Now, the way that this becomes a network is when many, many different currencies hold the same currency or token in their reserve balance, in their smart contract. So if A holds B, and if C holds B, and if D holds B, then A and C and on are all convertible for each other via that shared currency that they are connected to, which is B. In our case, it's BNT. Bancor Network Token, the currency of the Bancor Network, is the shared reserve token that currencies deposit into their smart contract in order to be part of the Bancor network, in order to be convertible to the now 150 currencies that are integrated with the Bancor network. So again, if currency one and two and three, and really it can go to infinite, are all using the same network token held in their balance, every currency in the network is convertible to every other currency via the shortest possible path, which is through that network.
It's amazing. And I think what's one of the most exciting things for me, and maybe listeners know this and maybe they don't, is that even some of the bigger currencies have huge numbers of market makers actually providing liquidity into trading exchanges. And those market makers are there to make sure that at any time people can buy and sell, but they also are expensive, and companies pay a lot of money to those market makers to facilitate that. And so one of the things that I love about Bancor is that you don't have to be a big project with millions of dollars. You know, for the very smallest local currencies, this still works really effectively and provides you with that liquidity, which is so necessary in order for these currencies to work.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is the mission and the vision of Bancor, which is to enable the long tail of tokens to thrive. And like you say, the long tail is ideally a very, very diverse and very, very large, potentially never-ending diversity of currencies, of token projects powering anything from local communities to arts and artists. And really the use cases go on. We can get into that in a moment. But the vision of Bancor is to enable many, many types of currencies to thrive. And doing this by separating liquidity and the ability to have liquidity from volume effectively. And like you say, capital investment. So today, the way that the bid and ask model works, like you say, really relies both on exchange listings, if we're talking about centralized exchanges, and on liquidity providers, market makers, to ensure that continuous liquidity. The Bancor protocol automates that process, which not only makes it continuous and reliable, but also makes it affordable and in fact, free. One of the most unique things I think about the Bancor model is that the Bancor Foundation is a true not-for-profit foundation, and the Bancor Network nor BNT take any fees on providing this service and allowing for the convertibility between any currencies in the Bancor Network. And so the idea really is to create a public infrastructure that is free, fair, accessible. It takes liquidity, the liquidity barrier, out of the currency creation and the currency utility game, meaning that because there is this public infrastructure that any token project can plug into, and at a very low capital investment, in fact, only the BNT that they deposit into their own smart contract, which they own and operate. But that staking to the network is the gateway that allows currencies to achieve this convertibility with other tokens in the network. And that means that new and niche and custom projects can get started, even if in the future they grow and decide to spend money on market making or on exchange listings or whatever they may choose to do. There is a place to start. And in fact, in the Bancor network, there are many very large and actively traded tokens, such as EOS itself, such as Ether itself. Very, very large projects that certainly can afford listings in other places and certainly do that. But the idea is to reduce the barriers to entry, both technical barriers to entry and then kind of structural barriers to entry. And in the currency creation and currency activation playing field, liquidity has been one of the highest barriers to entry, and we hope that the Bancor protocol brings it down to nearly
and
zero.
So talking about that long tail of all those unique and niche and interesting currencies, do you have one or two that you're particularly fond of?
Well, I hope it's not too much of a shameless plug, but Pixios just joined the Bancor network. I know that you're involved with that project. It's a currency that's meant to empower kind of gamification and creativity within a community of artists. I think of the 150 currencies that are live in the network, there are many that are super interesting and that really demonstrate the diversity that we expect to see. One of the projects I'm the most involved with and the most inspired by are some of the community currency pilots that we run in Africa and Kenya specifically. A community currency is kind of what it sounds like, which is a token that is issued to a specific group of people who may be kind of connected offline, like in a neighborhood or in a village. They may be connected online, like in an affinity group or a Facebook group or something like that. And it allows the members of that community to buy and sell from each other using that currency. So it's not so much of a payment token for an online product, if you will, like an access token to a piece of software. It's an actual currency that the members of the community use to transact. They use it in commerce. They might even use it in physical commerce. Like I show up at your stall and I buy your weavings or the art that you make. And in real time, I send you this community currency as payment for that product and service, even offline. And the pilots that we run in Kenya outside of Nairobi are super interesting because they really demand of us and challenge us and invite us to create a user experience that works for real people on the ground, and not just on the ground, you know, in California or New York or in London or in some of the more developed economies, but on the ground in places where there may not be a stable internet connection all the time, where folks might not have smartphones at all. They might still be using feature phones. And so how do you bring blockchain technology and specifically community currencies that are blockchain powered, how do you bring these potentially empowering technologies to folks who have a very different stack of devices and access than we may? And so the pilot, the Serifu, it's called the Serifu Network, that we work on there is actually a USSD-based application that runs on feature phones and over the cellular network. So it doesn't even require internet, and it allows users to use simple text codes to basically buy, sell, send, receive, and create their wallets and manage their accounts and their balances. So it's, you know, it's really, really fascinating to deploy a pilot on the ground that allows you to see in real time, real people using tokens to do real commerce and to achieve real abundance locally. So this is especially powerful in communities that don't have a lot of access to cash, whether it's the Kenyan shilling or the US dollar or Bitcoin or other currencies that are in existence. And these new currencies that are created for their community, you know, you could call it funny money or monopoly money, but they actually use it like real money, as we would if we had new tokens in our wallets that were convertible for goods and services. And so it's really inspiring to bring the theory down to practice. And in that pilot specifically, we have over 1,000 live and active wallets that have been opened on the network. We've seen transactions for most of the basic goods and services you can imagine, like food, healthcare services, transportation, school supplies, school fees, services like a haircut, like tutoring. And it's really empowering and challenging. And it's where we're going, which is hundreds of millions of currencies that empower billions of people to collaborate, to work together, to incentivize community members to reach shared goals. And it's really what is the promise, we think, of modern money technology, which is not just an opportunity to make more money. It's an opportunity.
I really enjoy hearing you speak, because I think of anybody, you have one of the most clear visions about how all of these different currencies can not only work together in this sort of, you know, where we at the moment, I feel sometimes we have this tribalism between different currencies, but the idea that, you know, we can have millions and billions of different currencies that work for different ecosystems, I think is so interesting, and the way that you envision it, I always find very, very powerful. When you were thinking about Bancor at the very beginning, is that how the vision started, or has it evolved over time?
Yeah, you know, what's funny is that Bancor is actually the solution to a problem that we experienced for many years before Bancor. The founders, we've been working together for over 15 years on all these companies that you mentioned. But before Bancor, we worked on a company called AppCoin, which was really trying to allow communities to create their own currencies and run their own economies. This was before Ethereum even. It was 2013, 14, 15, 16. And we ran pilots all over the world off-chain, doing centralized currencies but distributed to many communities. And we focused more on the front end, the user experience of how does one kind of receive a new currency into their phone, and how do communities create the trust and really the user experience that allows them to believe in these currencies and spend them and earn them. And we worked on that for 4 years, and we saw tremendous, tremendous possibility. We saw these pilots take off all over the world. We saw tens of millions of dollars worth of transactions within very diverse communities. We worked with a community of mothers. We worked with a community of students. We worked with a community of vegans. We worked with community of surfers. We had we worked with college campuses, and we saw kind of the same thing happening over and over, which is there's so much potential for communities to transact, to economically empower each other. And then there's such a barrier to entry with liquidity for these currencies, because the moment you step outside of the specific community we're talking about, whether it's the group of moms or the group of college kids, the moment you step away, your community currency is valueless. Nobody has heard of it. Nobody will accept it for anything. And so that lack of liquidity is very, very crippling over time, because it forces users to constantly have to choose and switch between what they will accept for their own goods or services or energy or skills. So if I'm a mom, let's say, in that community, and I can either sell my babysitting services for the local community currency, we called it hearts, or I can just charge shekels or dollars or yen or whatever's the currency in the country I live, I'm going to end up using the national currency more because it's the one that's more liquid. I can use it outside of my group of mothers too. I can use it at the supermarket. I can use it to put gas in my car. And so that liquidity barrier is actually the reason, was what we discovered, is the reason that new currencies aren't created, even though there's so much potential for economic empowerment with them. And that liquidity barrier we discovered over time really came from the bid and ask model. Because in order to be constantly matching buyers and sellers, like you mentioned at the beginning, you need those liquidity providers, you need those market makers, you need those exchanges to say, yes, we will list you. You need a lot of infrastructure and mostly a lot of capital in order to allow your currency to be liquid. And even then, it's mostly kind of liquid to speculators, right? And that's not necessarily the use case for a community currency. With a community currency, what you want is, in its liquidity, to be able to transact with it, but outside of your community, to have some kind of exchange rate between the currency of your community and the other currencies around you. And so we actually backed in to the Bancor solution from a real problem that we were having, trying to empower people to use what we call complementary or community currencies to achieve more economic stimulus locally. And so by the time that we were really discovering the edges of that problem, it was 2016 and Ethereum had launched the platform. And that's really when we realized that smart contracts were the solution, that we could program via smart contracts, we could really program the solution into the currencies. And that's how the Bancor protocol was born. It was meant to be a standard for the, and it is, and I hope will continue to gain adoption as a standard for cryptocurrencies and digital assets that allows them to be inherently liquid to each other, regardless of their trade volume. You might have one person buying a heart from outside the community this week, and you might have two more next week. And in the middle, you don't want your price to collapse. And that's what happens today with the bid and ask model. Like you said, that's why you pay market makers for that continuous market making activity, because the moment there's no one to buy when you want to sell, your prices collapse. That's why we see so much volatility as well. And the Bancor protocol was invented in order to suggest a new methodology, a new mechanic for how assets could be converted. And it really takes a lot of the human intervention out of the middle. It takes not only those exchange listings out of the middle, but also that market making and liquidity providing, because the smart contract is always there. You don't need to pay it. You don't need to take it to dinner. You don't need to do anything with it. You just need to deposit your initial reserve balance, and that serves as your initial liquidity pool and thus your gateway to a network of hopefully, you know, millions of currencies. Today we have hundreds of currencies and counting.
So exciting. It's so exciting. I'm going to change track a little bit. I'm part of Shios, and I know a lot of the listeners of the SVK podcast have a deep interest in EOS. you're on the board of the EOS Alliance, and the last week or so has been full of big news around EOS about voice and all those things. Can you tell me a little bit more, for people who aren't familiar with the EOS Alliance, you know, how that began and what you do there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start by saying that we're big EOS fans. We have been since the beginning. We were one of the first, if not the first, large or live, I should say, token projects to announce support for the EOS blockchain. We're very proud of that. We love the technology. We love the team, and we love the experimentation. Where it will go is anyone's guess. But we certainly love the experimentation around governance models, and we're big fans. So the EOS Alliance was really born to be kind of that ecosystem foundation for EOS, the way the Ethereum Foundation, in a sense, functions for Ethereum, and the way the Bitcoin Foundation functions for Bitcoin. One of the great challenges with decentralization, I'm sure we don't need to talk about the opportunities because we're all kind of in that optimism around the possibilities, but one of the great challenges is coordination and is kind of consensus building and progress of whether it's the protocol, the community, the awareness, the education. Decentralization has many, many benefits. It's harder to manipulate. It's harder to take over. And it also has some drawbacks, which is that it's harder to coordinate, and it's harder to script, and it's harder to move quickly. And so foundation's role within a decentralized ecosystem can be many things. What it is for the EOS Alliance and what it is for some of the ones that I mentioned, Ethereum and Bitcoin, I'm sure others, Bancor as well, in the ecosystem, is it's a hub for information, for education, occasionally or depending on the circumstance, for resource allocation, and really for the community to gather and to discuss and depending on the circumstances, decide about things they'd like to see, votes they'd like to propose, and other things. With the EOS Alliance, it's really in its early days. It was founded by Brock Pierce, who's also a great friend, a mentor, an advisor to Bancor. And the journey that we're going to go on in the next few months, and we'll have more formal announcements to share in the coming quarters, is really one of continued experimentation in governance. What we'd like to do is continuously march along the spectrum of decentralization. We wrote an interesting blog post about this at Bancor called "Decentralization is a Journey, Not a Destination." And in fact, it's something we believe in greatly, which is that the journey is not binary. It's not zero to one. You don't need to be fully, fully decentralized nor fully, fully centralized, but necessarily there's a lot of gradient and spectrum. We happen to think that a responsible pathway sort of walks steadily and methodically and with a lot of learning from one to the other. And that's also how you absorb the learnings and deal with crises or potential unknowns or problems. And so the EOS Alliance is a hub for the EOS ecosystem. It is a place where education, information, materials will be created and shared with the community, where the media and other third parties have an address, have a somewhere that they can go to get information that is current, that's up to date, that is multi-perspective, that shares kind of the debates that are happening in the community, not from a position of a specific perspective, but on what is the nature of the debate that's ensuing. The Ethereum Foundation, of course, has resources in it that it has recently announced that it's helping to allocate throughout the developer community. In the future, hopefully the EOS Alliance will be able to serve a similar role for the community. The idea is to have, you know, someone somewhere whose sort of daily mandate and daily passion is helping the ecosystem move forward. A lot of times that comes down to communication and information, helping people kind of make sense of the different debates that are going on, the different problems that are unfolding, the different positions that are being taken. And of course, in a distributed proof of stake model where so much of the future is dictated by voting and by participant staking, what you want in a system like that, let's call it a kind of democracy, what you want is great information. What you want is for people to know what it is they're voting on. What are the pros and cons of different votes? What are the potential outcomes? Who are the folks that are speaking for or against different ideas? How have outcomes to similar things played out in the past? A healthy democracy is really as healthy as its information systems. And that is what we hope to achieve with the EOS Alliance.
It's I'm such a big fan of the Alliance, and I know that all of us at Shios see such huge value and potential value coming from that organization to the whole community, and I'm sure that many other people listening would agree with me. So I guess a kind of a thank you, I think, for being such a core part of that group and really driving things forward. So I always wrap up, Galia, with quick fire questions to get just a few hints on who Galia is when she's not running Bancor. Are you a late night person or an early morning person?
I'm more of a late night person, and more often than not, I'm a both.
Probably on a plane I would think.
We do travel a fair amount, and me especially. But it's been a really great part of the last few years. It's a really globalized industry, as you and many of us know. Having grown up in Silicon Valley and kind of the heart of the tech industry, this is a great new chapter from my perspective, where the tech and the innovation and the progress is really, truly coming from every corner of the world. And it's a great privilege to be a part of it.
What's the last book that you read?
I just finished The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist. I'm surprised by myself that I hadn't read it sooner. It's a great book. Lynn talks about how money is a lot like water. It flows between us. Wherever it goes, it can create life and abundance. When it pools and stagnates, when it's stuck, it can create a lot of toxicity and flooding and negative outcomes. And that it really, wherever it goes, it takes our kind of greatest intentions and aspirations with it to create new progress, new economic stimulation. And it's kind of a mirror for our intentionality in the world. At least it can be.
Amazing. That sounds super interesting. And finally, who is your favorite person to follow on crypto Twitter?
Oh my gosh, I don't follow crypto Twitter. I have to admit. I always stay tuned for what Brock is talking about. I always like to see what Brendan Bloomer is talking about over at EOS. But I really don't follow crypto Twitter too much.
Probably very wise. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell the listeners at home? Maybe a piece of advice for people entering the crypto space at the moment?
You mentioned before tribalism. You mentioned also inclusion and empowerment of women and just generally more diversity in the space. I think that we have such a great opportunity to kind of mature to our third way and look at things much more as a collaborative game or sport than a domination-based competition. One token's success is not another token's failure. Women being empowered is not the disempowerment of men. I think that we really have an opportunity to be creative about how we propose third way solutions, win-win solutions to many of the problems that we face. And it's really the duality, the binary kind of win-lose, you or me, left or right, blue or red, you know, proof of work or proof of stake, yes regulation, no regulation. It's really these binary dichotomies that we've set up for ourselves that I think are problematic. You know, communism, capitalism, like there's more options. There's humanism. There's a lot of things that we can do if we put our minds and hearts to it. And that's really what I'm the most excited to see in our industry and in our generation and beyond.
Amazing. Galia, if people want to follow you or kind of follow Bancor, how do they do that?
So you can follow Bancor on all the channels. We're at Bancor on Twitter. That's probably a good place to start. And we're on Reddit and Facebook and pretty much anywhere you go.
Pretty much everywhere.
As at Bancor. And I usually share my news and updates via those channels.
Excellent. Galia, thank you so much for your time today. And best of luck with everything coming forward with Bancor.
Yeah, thank you so much. I can't wait to see you soon.
You too.
So listen, that's a wrap. I got to bounce. Thank you for your time and attention. As always, if you haven't already, subscribe to the SVK Crypto podcast. Hit us up on Twitter at @SVK_crypto. Follow us and join the discussion on Telegram, SVK Crowd. And if you have any questions or queries, feel free to email myself, cstory, cstory@svkcrypto.com. That's a wrap. And I've got to bounce.